Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Floor on Thursday, the 5th of April, recording at 9:30 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being the last day of our trading week here in the United Kingdom, as I mentioned in last night's audio, we are closed for Good Friday. It's a holiday, official holiday in the UK, and also Easter Monday. So I will use this as the big picture long-term outlook audio. So first let's have a quick review of the week. In terms of stock markets, the trend was mostly downwards as the impressive rally that we've seen this year lost upside momentum. And that selling pressure mostly continued in here today, although lighter, and there were some exceptions. China bounced, having opened up after being closed for several days, but today we had mostly small declines, including in the U.S. very small declines, although the Nasdaq was steadier, helped by the mighty Apple hitting another new all-time high. Now, overall, though, it's what we'd call a risk-off week, with profit-taking in stock markets, government bond prices firming, and we see that again today with the U.S. long bond back up to 138, that's the future, 138.09. The U.S. dollar has steadied, the dollar index is back above 80. And the euro has weakened against that background, is currently down at 130.62. Sterling also has been weaker, 158.26. Precious metals have been weak this week, but bounced a bit here today. Moderate bounce. Silver's at 31.68 as I speak. Gold is at 16.30 and change. That's up almost $10. Platinum back above 1600 to 1607. Palladium 646. That's a good gain for palladium here today. Crude oil, which had come down in the week, was a little firmer here today. Mostly in the WTI, though, 103, that's up 160. And the Brent, I think, Brent was up 94 cents, currently 123.28. And commodities mostly came down on the week, but again, mostly picked up here a little bit today. The exceptions today were natural gas, cocoa, coffee, and cotton were all a little bit easier. Okay, so what's going on here overall in terms of the big picture? Well, the cyclical bull market has paused. And that's hardly a surprise. If there's any surprise in all of this, it's that it ran for as strong and as long as it did without a pullback and consolidation phase. Now, in the action versus reaction stakes, the gains were sufficiently strong to suggest that once these uptrends did boil over, that we would probably get a few weeks and could easily turn into a few months of ranging pullback and consolidation. And I think that's what we're likely to see. April's usually a steady month, but as you know, then you get into that sell in May and go away period. This doesn't always work, of course. But statistically, we could expect, particularly following such strong gains, a bit of underperformance in here overall. But I don't think we're going to see anything like the short, sharp, cyclical bear market that we saw last year from about this time on through September, before all that churning near the lows led to the strong gains in October, which were the beginning of the cyclical bull phase that we're in right now. So I think what we'll see is, as I say, is mostly more ranging overall. And to the extent that there are some sharp downward moves, not across the boards probably, but selectively, they're more likely to be in areas of major concern, and that's in Europe. Spain is back in the spotlight. Everybody's forgotten about Greece for a while now, worrying about Spanish bond yields. Spanish stock market has been weak. And in contrast, complete opposite of that, we've got this tech-led NASDAQ with the mightiest company of them all, Apple, keeping it relatively quite firm. But so many of these companies are overextended on the upside, not least Apple, of course, but it hasn't lost its form yet. It is still in this orderly upward trend, as you can see on the daily charts. When Apple does eventually spill over, and obviously it will at some point, because that's the nature of markets, and there's nothing that's accelerated up that didn't eventually spill over and experience a mean reversion, unless it was a takeover, and I don't think that's the case. So we can we need to be a little cautious here. I don't think there's a cause for heavy selling, but if you are nervous about some positions or feel that inclined to lighten a little bit, now's the time to do it. Not when we get what I suspect will be a bigger correction, and sentiment has turned broadly bearish. So I'll repeat that point. If you feel you're going to be inclined to sell over the next few months, better do it now rather than when markets have been beaten down, because that's when they will be a clear buying opportunity, in my opinion. If you just want to sit tight and ride this out, I don't think we're likely to see anything worse than a mean reversion correction. And I think we will see, for the stronger markets, we'll see them hold half of the gains that we had from the start of the year or more. Long-dated government bond prices are firm right now, as you know, but beneath these overhanging top areas, they may make some modest inroads into those top areas, but I don't think they will go through them. That would imply a loss of confidence in global GDP growth, and global GDP growth is pretty modest overall, but I don't think. And another factor indicating that is the softness of commodities generally, and you can best see that in the CCI Continuous Commodity Index. So despite what has been the strength of crude oil contracts and gasoline, that overall that Continuous Commodity Index, which had peaked in April of last year, is still in an overall downward trend. Now, that helps to reduce some of the commodity price inflation, But it also is an indication that global GDP growth is slowing, and that's why I have very modest expectations for stock markets over the next few months. But as we mean revert, what's likely to be best? Well, it's easier to say once we've actually seen the mean reversion. But the very much informed sector has been the autonomies. Those, of course, are those big multinational quasi-autonomous companies that have outgrown their home countries, and they are dominant within their industries. And they cover a number of a range of industries, but they're probably more in the consumer-oriented sector than anywhere else, from restaurants to like McDonald's to Nike to Apple. And then there are also technology ones. Well, Apple's technology, but consumer technology. And but there are things like IBM and so on. So my feeling is that this is going to remain a very attractive sector overall. I mean, Fuller Money really does like technology, and we have for quite some time. It's partly because you're getting this exponential rate of technological growth. The risks are if you get it wrong, or somebody, and getting it wrong can mean that somebody else just gets it better, if you'll forgive the grammar. That causes a company like RIM, the BlackBerry manufacturer, to just fall way off the overall pace. So there's quick obsolescence in this sector. For those that don't make it, which is why we do need to monitor them on charts and start to fret if they lose that overall upward trend bias on their own rather than as the entire sector per se. Now, what I'm moving towards, though, is to say that if we, and as and when we see this additional correction and partial mean reversion, if you're looking for areas to buy, I would certainly consider autonomies following that pullback. I think that's a theme that will be with us for a very long time. And in a hypothetical 10-year lockup, I only mention that because it's in Tim Price's piece that I am posting here today. I would rather have a portfolio of autonomies overweighted with technology, but the rest geared towards global consumerism. I'd much rather have that than gold on a 10-year lockup. And many of the it's not that I'm bearish on gold. I'm not, but more on that in a moment. But many of those autonomies are also dividend aristocrats, and so they've got attractive yields often, which are often better than the yields on 10-year U.S. Treasuries. Okay. Not too much to say on the long-dated government bonds. I mean, I don't like them. That doesn't mean that they're are that they are great shorts in here necessarily. But as they get back up into the top areas, they from any trading perspective, they're probably a bit of a better short than buy. Even though I don't expect a big downside move for the likes of U.S. T-bonds. In the near term, I expect it over the medium to longer term. Looking at the currencies, it's really a question of being range bound overall, which is good. I've mentioned that before. This is stability. I don't think we have any imminent currency crisis. If I'm wrong on that, it would be the euro among the majors that I think would be vulnerable. And on a fundamental basis, I think it's quite easy to justify a somewhat weaker euro. And the U.S. dollar, on a fundamental basis, well, can argue it both ways, but I'm probably of the camp that it's likely to do a little bit better against the euro overall. The currencies that I think may do best over the longer term are those of the growth economies, but they're much more volatile. And the growth economies are a bit out of favor right now because they're not getting the monetary stimulus that we have seen in the U.S., for instance. That may change if we do get more evidence of slowing GDP growth and corporate profits, which I think is quite possible. Precious metals. The main point to make in here, I think, and if you've been listening to the audios on a regular basis, you've heard me say this, is that we're still in this medium-term post-accelerated peak phase. We've seen this before during the cyclical bull market dating back to 2001. And you can see this in the chart library quite easily. Just look at a longer term chart. You don't really need more than 10 years, actually. And put it on a semi-logarithmic basis with a 200-day moving average. And you'll notice that every time gold, about every other year, it would accelerate up a bit too much and then get, on average, an 18-month consolidation, pullback and consolidation. That's basically a mean reversion phase. Lots of ranging, support building before the next upward leg. Now, that's what I think we're seeing here right now. The timing is varied in that it's lost the very precise sequence that we had seen, where it was the around August and September of the odd-numbered years that we would see gold complete those consolidations and then take off on a big run. As you know, gold accelerated to a peak in August of last year. But the more important point is to remember that approximate 18-month consolidation phase. And so with a peak in August, we can expect plenty more, I think, overall sideways ranging, during which gold will be very, and the other precious metals will be very difficult to predict in terms of the shorter term swing, so not easy to trade. But if traders do anything, and also if investors do anything in here, that I would favor a policy of nibbling lightly on weakness. And certainly for traders, letting go of it on the rallies. I haven't done enough of that myself. I mean, I'm bought on weakness on occasion, but I haven't been quick enough to take the profits. And I think it's important to actually do that because of this overall sideways trading range. Thereafter, I think we will see another upward move on gold. At this stage, I'd be surprised if it happened this year. Mind you, markets are full of surprises. If it's going to do that, we'll have to see it get back up above 1800 and consolidate there for the pattern to actually suggest that it resumes the advance sooner rather than later. But I think the odds favor a longer pause and consolidation. But the driver, of course, is supply and elasticity for gold, and all that money printing past, current, and probably future as well. help to move that market higher. Okay, on the industrial commodities, we've had the speculation in the crude oil market. My feeling is I've written, and I linked to those comments again yesterday, that I think that we will not see any military strike on Iran this year. I think first the White House would be very adverse to that sort of thing, and it's a big risk for would be a big risk for Israel to go on its own on that. Also, it would be a big risk to do that in any event. Logically, it's not a great idea. They're probably better off to continue their opposition more covertly, as we've seen in the past, trying to delay the progress. So, I think we could see less saber rattling there, or less in the way of alarmist articles regarding any kind of military action against Iran. And hopefully that'll enable, or that should enable, the price of oil to ease back somewhat in line with that somewhat slower growth. But it's finely balanced here, and it wouldn't take much in the way of supply disruptions to push the price back up again. And so far, although the WTI has shown a little bit of price deterioration, that Brent is still very steady, and that's the more important one overall. So as I've said before, there's nothing on that Brent chart yet that says that the upward trend is over for a while. That's an ongoing concern generally. But overall, the message from most other commodities is that we're getting a little bit slower growth, and we're seeing less speculation in the sector as well. And that's probably also partly reflects the fact that gold and silver are off the boil in terms of their previous powerful upward trends. Agricultural commodities, it's going to be down to the crop cycles very much. And we've had a lot of turbulence in recent years, so stockpiles they don't have that cushion to deal with some adverse crops. So really, to keep those prices down, we need to see some good yields in this crop cycle. And that, as they say, is in the hands of the gods. And on that note, folks, I'll draw an end to this audio. I think I've touched on all the key points that I wanted to. And comment of the day and the audio will resume on Tuesday. Have a fabulous weekend. All the best.